Welcome to Take Note. This is Ted Walker. Take Note is a podcast and a blog about paying attention and keeping a notebook. This is our conversation about notebooks, attention, and appreciating the possibilities of any given moment, from the poignant to the preposterous. So the first thing I'm going to do is ask Adam, what do you got? By which I mean, what did you write down in your notebook in the last week that that we can revisit and ponder and enjoy?
Sure, Ted. I wrote down date night, Korean restaurant, seat at the bar, TV tuned to yoga DVD infomercial, Olympics finally come on, and some kid chants, "They finally changed the channel. They finally changed the channel," which was exactly how I felt.
He just put voice to it.
Yeah, exactly. I felt like such a little boy, such a little child at that moment, because I felt just exactly the same way that he did. So maybe he was a mature little kid in a Korean restaurant.
Now, sitting at the bar on a date night at a Korean restaurant sounds fantastic.
Well, you know, the last time we were in this restaurant, it was empty. Then we returned on a Saturday night without a reservation.
And so then you were just stuck at the bar. So
it wasn't like looking at a lot of like before. They had video of the before people in the infomercial. How is that possible? just a lot of people that needed a workout DVD, and then a lot of working out just on the big screen right in front of us.
Same clips kind of over and over again.
Yep. What do you have?
It's also Olympics related. We were watching the opening ceremonies, which I thought were quite nice. And the three-year-old says, "Oh, they're drumming with fire. I didn't know you could do that." Which is sort of, gets at the nature of the opening ceremonies. I feel like if the opening ceremonies have caused you to take pause and say, "I didn't know you could do that," that's like a successful ceremony. I would say the drones making crazy shapes in the sky met that bar pretty effectively.
I missed all the good stuff. I was mostly focused on the countries in the Korean alphabet order.
I'll tell you, we would think about that every 30 seconds or so, with a span of 15 minutes in between. So we never came anywhere close to any kind of consensus, did any research, figured anything out, just kept saying, "Oh, yeah, yeah, that's the Korean alphabet," as if we had any idea right. What that meant or what what the implications were.
I thought that the Olympics could be a nice cultural learning moment for my oldest son, Logan. But it really all came down to me explaining to him that if we were Asian, people would call him Webb Logan. That was it.
And explaining to him why they were not allowed to put the Russian flag up with the athletes from Russia. What else you got, Adam?
All right. I wrote just a really stupid, very sort of snobby thing down. I wrote, "When I look at Robert Frank's The Americans, the photo book, I think there must have been a bunch of totally average-looking people around that Frank didn't photograph." Okay, what else do you have to... I don't know.
What else do I have? I'm flipping, of course, through my pitch-black field notes notebook. I like to point that out every time. One of these days, it'll change. Actually, I'm about to finish this one. I gotta head over to my local stationers and pick another edition. Maybe I'll wait till the new one comes out, whatever that might be. Chile, the nation, has the fourth most expensive Big Mac in South America.
Where did you learn that?
I think I Googled something along the lines of how expensive is it to live in Chile.
Are you guys moving to Chile?
I'm not gonna rule anything out. No, we're not moving to Chile. What is the hashtag backup plan?
You know, you.
It's interesting to, I mean, I've never been an expatriate, and plenty of people who I know in the States up and move to the States. And I don't spend much time giving them their due for straight up moving to another country and making it all work and making friends. And when you start to actually think about doing it yourself, it's quite an intimidating prospect. So you end up looking at silly websites for expatriates, and I'm sure there's blog posts for every country in the world about how expensive the Big Macs are in comparison to neighboring countries in the region. And now you know about Chile's
Maybe Chile
fourth.
is more of like a Wendy's place.
All right, next segment, Adam. Give me your recommendations. What do you got? What's going on in the culture that's caught your attention? Put me on to something good.
All right, I read David Grand's article about Antarctica in The New Yorker called The White Darkness, and it's a sort of article where I was suddenly taking notes constantly. I pulled out a highlighter pencil to try to highlight parts of the article because I was just writing down way too much about Antarctica that I felt like I would really never need to go back and find. It's a story of a British explorer who attempted a cross Antarctica solo trek, and it talks about that. It talks about his history. Talks about a previous trek that he made with a few others, and it talks about Shackleton's trek from 100 years earlier and the inspiration that he found. And it's just fantastic, and it's really long. It was a great article to get lost in.
And it appeared, I just glanced at the top, but it looked like there's some beautiful photographs. And was there any interactive sort of digital effects of, in the article? Oh, although it sounds like you were working from a paper version.
Oh, I can tell you that if you go and you read it online, the top of the page is a dark blue, and as you scroll, the blue gets lighter.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I recommend it, and I learned, for example, I mean, this is so not what you need to know about the article. There's just some real magic in the middle of it, and I learned, for example, that Antarctica is classified as a desert because there's so little precipitation. And also that the continent is 5.5 million square miles, but it doubles in the winter because the
Wow.
coastal waters freeze over.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. He wrote The Lost City of Z, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. And it's a lot like that in that the Lost City of Z deals with two or three different treks to the Lost City and overlaps them and compares them over, I'm gonna say, about 100 years, like this one.
Well, our household was quite taken with The Lost City of Z for a few months back in the day. I can't actually remember any of the details except for the, general impression of jungle-based discomfort.
I'm right there with you. I feel like giant spiders, but that could just be King Kong.
Skull Island.
Yeah.
I want to recommend Oh Yeah, Dude. And I can't even remember. Maybe I've even recommended it on this podcast before. But they just recently celebrated their 12th birthday. And now, Oh Yeah, Dude is a podcast started in 2006. Two gentlemen, Seth and Jonathan, and they essentially hang out in their living room, pacing around, reading, flipping through index cards of headlines of the day. And just things, things that catch their mind, but they sort of shuffle through them and riff on them. And it's just been consistently one of the most enjoyable learning or listening experiences I can think of. So I wanted to hype that. OhYeahDude.com.
Nice.
I think I probably hooked on with them. And it was actually, I think I heard about them on Jesse Thorne's podcast. Maybe it was Jordan Jesse Go. Might have been, so it must have been 2010 or 2009 or something like that. But it actually reminds me of an article I read that I think I sent it to you that discussed podcasting and the appeal of podcasting and the simulated intimacy of podcasting that I felt like when I think about, oh yeah, dude, I think it's that perfect, you're sort of in the room with these two really smart, really funny people, and you just can't help but feeling like you're intertwined with them.
I think I listened to one or two episodes on your suggestion or on your recommendation, and many years ago, probably when you first started listening, like 8 years ago. My memory, well, is this accurate? Are they just stoned all the time?
No, actually, one of them is sober.
Okay. So the I got other that one, wrong.
The other one, Jonathan. So Seth is sober, and he's sort of the driving force of the thing. He's the, you know, you know he's the one who's putting all the index cards together and scouring the news. And then Jonathan is actually the son of John Larroquette, which just adds a whole nother really interesting angle. And they're really, you know, they're really upfront about it. They talk about, you know, you remember John Larroquette?
Yeah.
And so that just adds another wrinkle, and they live in Hollywood, and, you know, very, I know they're not stoned all the time, but they, you can never quite tell what phases they're in, or, you know, maybe one month Jonathan's like sober too, and then the next, you know, and it's all sort of ambiguous and a kind of a, almost like a, you know, your neighbors or something, where you're like, I thought he said he was sober, but then he was talking about, whatever, no big deal. So it has that feel to it.
Nice. I have one more recommendation this week.
Yes.
I saw Lady Bird and was just blown away by how good it was. Awesome. Don't really think that I was necessary. Like, I don't know that there's a ideal audience for it, but it's, you know, it's like a young woman's coming of age story, like her last year in high school, and there were just so many moments where I was like, oh, that's exactly right, but nothing like that ever occurred in my life. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's just, the characters are great, and there's also this great line that I loved, something that I think is really true, but different words for it, where the teacher sort of catches Lady Bird describing her hometown of Sacramento, and she says, you clearly love Sacramento, and the whole movie is like Lady Bird hates Sacramento and is desperate to get out, and Lady Bird says, well, I guess I pay attention, and the teacher's like, well, don't you think that's the same thing, love and paying attention? And I was just, I don't know, that moment just seemed brilliant to me. And then the rest of the story, actually, in some weird way, I think if Lady Bird believes that, maybe it really changes her character or her understanding of some people.
Awesome. I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list.
Lives up to the hype.
Awesome. So every year the Oscar nominations come out, and every year I say, I'm going to really make an effort before the broadcast to watch a decent number of Oscar films. And this year, like every year, I've utterly failed to do so and will not do so. Just sad. It's not funny or interesting. It's just sad.
I feel the same way. We've done a little better this year. I haven't seen Phantom Thread, which I'd really like to see. But
I always feel like the only way I would ever actually watch all these movies is if I committed to just watching illegal streams of them from like 11:30 at night until 1 in the morning, which is just no kind of way to live.
Would you take half days off work and just go in the afternoon without telling anyone?
Oh God, that would be amazing.
I always just wonder why I don't do that.
I don't either.
I've always got extra days, like I've always got extra vacation days that I like don't get around to using, but I never have the time to do it.
I think it's the guilt. How could you live with yourself doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing that you're just living off the fat of the land, just not getting anything done, doing nothing productive or useful.
Right.
You can't do it after a certain point.
I can't.
That's how you know you're a grown-up. I went to a birthday party a few weeks ago, and a children's birthday party, and it was over, and all the kids were kind of mingling on the kind of plaza outside, and it was near a movie theater.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm just bleary-eyed and trying to keep an eye on the kids and just, you know, you never really can quite check out. And just watching these people just strolling up to the movie theater without a goddamn care in the world, just strolling in, strolling out.
Do you hate them a little?
Oh, I hated every single one of them.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Just like, look at you people. Oh, you got, oh, I wonder which movie you're going to see. Oh, there's so many to choose from. Should you go to the Star Wars one again? Or maybe go see the other one that's a little more arty. Oh, it was awful.
I often fantasize about telling them what their life is going to be like.
That's all we got, man. That's all we got. They were, to be fair, there were a lot of older folks who had clearly probably gone through the cycle, but had now earned their just hour after hour of, you know, leisure time. So I don't want to, it wasn't just 18-year-old kids who hadn't yet had the enthusiasm beaten out of them.
I think we can hate them all equally. Exactly. I had my neighbors across the street, they're grandparents now, and one Sunday they were sitting on their front porch reading the paper. We took the kids on a walk and we came back and they were still on the front porch reading the Sunday paper. And I said to them, I said, you guys are killing me with this Sunday paper. What I wouldn't give to just be able to sit down with the Sunday paper. And the wife, she goes, well, we've earned it. It's like, all right, please. Congratulations.
I'm realizing something about our little podcast here. It's also a podcast about parenting. I'm not even going to expand upon that. But I mean, you know, when I think about my notebooks, I think about the notes that I take. So many of them are about holding on to those little moments that you experience when you're parenting that are really, they're the most beautiful moments, because everything that surrounded those beautiful moments was just an agonizing circus of psychological warfare.
We want to cherish these moments and get past them all as soon as possible.
So moving to our next segment, which is, you know, our grab bag special segment. I think what I like to think of probably is our stationary segment, if we really want to dig into something. And I actually did want to dig into something a little bit, which is parenting oriented. My 5-year-old, who's really into writing and drawing pictures and stuff, and, you know, writing, grabs my field notes out of my hands one day, which I love when she does drawings and stuff in there. But she was doing like a scientific drawing, and I thought, hey, let me get you a notebook of your own. I'll go home. I'll go find one for you. And turns out I didn't have any field notes left. I probably would have given her one of those. But then I say, oh, actually, you have a lot of notebooks left. And she says, well, Dad, they don't fit in my purse. And she has this awesome leather purse that her aunt made for her. And I thought, of course, that's like exactly the criteria that I look for in a notebook. If it doesn't fit in my pocket, I'm barely going to be able to keep track of it for 5 seconds. So I went to Target, spent inordinate amount of time selecting several notebooks for her to choose from later. I was just going to take them home, and just really got a couple, you know, cheap little 5-star notebooks. A little spiral bound, but that fit into her book. And It was just the only thing more enjoyable than shopping for my own notebooks was shopping for those notebooks for her, thinking what color she'd like the most, thinking if would it fit into her purse, trying to figure out which one she would like more, getting a couple different options. And I had this whole plan that I wasn't going to, I was kind of going to play it off like, oh, I just had these around. I wasn't going to push it too hard, like, I got you this one because I thought you might like this. So I got home and I kind of said, hey, I found a couple notebooks you might like. And she sort of quietly sucked them into her little universe and, you know, didn't really say anything to me. And I'm like, this will work itself out. And a couple hours later, I'm sitting at the dining room table, and she just kind of quietly walks out and sets one of the notebooks on the table. I was like, what, you picked one? She's like, yeah, you can have that one back. I like the other one. I like the other one. It was awesome. It's, I guess, what, that's like every stationary nerd's dream, that their children will start to exhibit the same symptoms from which we suffer.
Absolutely. My 3-year-old Wiley, he wants his notebook. He knows that I've always got a notebook. He sees it. He wants a notebook. He puts stickers on his notebook. Mostly I steal stickers from him. You know, the 3-year-old going around life, people just give 3-year-olds stickers. And what do 3-year-olds do with them? They put them on their hand or something. So my notebook right now is literally, I mean, I've got 2, 3, 4 stickers that are Wiley's stickers that he just couldn't hold on to. And they had to go somewhere. And if they don't end up in my notebook, they end up on the floor. And then Logan, the 8-year-old, he loves those Field Notes Sweet Tooth, the perforated ones. So he makes his own Pokemon characters on there. And he draws them and he gives them hit points or health points, I don't know, and combat points. And he's just constantly drawing them, ripping them out, drawing them, ripping them out. And he's got a huge stack of Field Notes for I'm gonna do this or I'm gonna do that, or you know, he's got a bunch of Field Notes that have a few pages each used in them.
He's in.
Yeah.
He's locked into the lifestyle.
I may have pushed them on him too hard. If Field Notes doesn't come up with more perforated page books, he might be out. Honestly, he might just switch to Post-its. but he really liked this. For a while, whenever I went to Field Notes to pick up books or something, or if they had a sale or something, or an event, I was always just picking up another pack of Sweet Tooth for him.
Well, that was that version is like despised by most card carrying grown-ups, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the vibe I get. Yeah.
But that's a perfect irony that it's perfect for a kid with an active imagination.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
It's about all you could ask for. That's my special topic. What do you got?
So a week ago, I saw this article, a few weeks ago maybe, I saw this article, New Jersey Town Aims to Keep App-Guided Outsiders Off Its Streets. And it's about it's about Waze and Google Maps sending people through a New Jersey suburb to avoid highway traffic. And so they've created new rules about closing roads to non-locals during rush hour times. And it just made me think about how, 10 years ago, I guess, 11 years ago, I got my first GPS, and how I don't really know anymore how to get anywhere. That's a slight exaggeration, but not really. Like, it's really, I don't pay attention to that anymore. I trust in the app completely to take me the best way. And I always had this joke that, I don't even know if it's a joke because it's not funny, but I always had this thought that eventually all the streets are going to be pronounced however the computer pronounces them. And I think we're really getting there. Like, 8 years ago, that was like a funny little insight. Maybe funny, but I think that's true now. And I don't know. I think it's interesting how police departments in local towns are responding to technology and the whole idea that you can keep people off your street if you're not local.
Well, I mean, you'd almost think that they would sort of petition Google to create like a digital detour where they were, I mean, you could see laws on the books where they had to change their algorithm or something.
Yeah, and I guess the police chief in this New Jersey suburb is working with all of the app companies, working with Apple, working with Google, and I find that kind of interesting too. That's what police work has become in the suburbs. The article says we went and met with Waze and Google Maps and Apple Maps to make sure that as of this date, they didn't send traffic through our town between 9 a.m. or whatever.
That's awesome and crazy. I mean, if what have you not done in forever, which is to write down that classic directions notation, right? You know, like giant L. I used to write L on Smith Street, R on Bank Street, L on, I mean, when's the last time you did that?
I get offended when somebody tries to give me directions.
Like, stop talking. You are literally wasting my
That's
time.
That's right.
Now, yeah, I'll tell you what'll change your perspective, and I'm basing this on very recent experience, is if you have a really crappy smartphone that's just on the decline and is likely to die at any moment, you realize how tenuous your relationship to digital aids like Google Maps truly is, and how it can just all go out the window in a heartbeat. All because you had to have another glass of whiskey next to that campfire, and you had to rest your iPhone on top of that guitar while you played that amazing song. And it just happened to slide down. And
Did you lose the phone that way?
I didn't lose it, but I severely handicapped it.
You know what we did Sunday? We went sledding, and of our 40 or 50 minutes spent sledding, 30 minutes of it were taken with trying to find Jennifer's phone that had fallen out of her pocket in the 12, 14, 18 inches of snow that we'd had on this huge sledding hill.
Call it again.
Oh, it died after the first call. Yeah. I found it, though. I mean, it's the best moment I'm going to have in 2018. I saw a little corner of it covered in snow. The kids are screaming. One's at the top of the hill, one's at the bottom of the hill.
You got it out of the way early. You're
That's
highlight.
Right. That's yeah, good. I'm going to retire for the rest
of
the
year. You know it'll never die.
What'll never die?
A notebook. Let's do this again.
Sounds good, Ted.